We're holding on page 70 in Brachos Ois Nun Gimel. We learned yesterday about how when Chizkiyahu was davening for himself to be cured, we said that by Yasef Ponev Alakir, he turned his face to the wall, and we said one explanation of that was he invoked the Schus, or he said the Isha Shunamis and her husband made only one wall for Elisha, and in the Schus of that, their child was revived. Alachis Kam Bakama Shloimu had the Schus of plating the whole Heichel with silver and gold that you should save me in his Schus. So now let's talk about that story with the Isha Shunamis and her husband Elisha. The pasuk says Nasana Alias Kirktam. So you have over there, it's in Sefer Melachim. We have it as the Haftarah, Parshas Vayera, that the Isha Shunamis says to her husband, we have this Isha Likim is always passing through our town. Let's make for him an Aliyas Kirktam. So what does that mean? Now, the simple meaning of Aliyah would be a second floor of a house, and Kir would mean a wall. So Marsha explains, it can't just mean that they had a big second floor in their house and they're going to partition it and put up a wall. Because Marsha says, usually a second floor of a house like that would have only one staircase leading up to it. At least that's how houses were built in those days. So if you divide it up, then how is Elisha going to get up to his room except by passing through another room? And if you're going to do that, you might as well give him the whole attic. So therefore, we have to understand it's something different. So Rav and Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel argue what it means. Chad Omer Aliyah Prutza Uprua Hoysa. One says that it was the second floor of a house, Aliyah meaning the second floor, but it was Prutza or Prua. It was open to the sky. It was it didn't have a roof on it. Bikiruha, and they put a roof on it in order that now it's a place where Elisha can stay. V'chad Omer Achsadra Dola Hoysa. The other one says it was a large entryway or an Achsadra technically is an area that's closed in on three sides and open on the fourth. You have the expression, for example, the Gemara says elsewhere, Olam Achsadra Hudoyma, the world is like an Achsadra open on one side. So it was a big Achsadra, V'chol Kol L'Shnayim, and they divided it in two by putting a wall in the middle. What? And no, in Pirkei Avos you have the Mazadim and the Prozer, but Pnei Adama, that's something else. A Prozer is a hallway. Hakosev explains that the underlying machloikus is over here is we're saying that the Isha Shunamis and her husband wanted that when Elisha stays in town, he should be close to them. That's the reason why they want to have him as an Orach in their house in the first place. But how close do they want him to be? If we say Aliyah B'Keruah, they're saying that we want him in our house, but we still want to have, there should be a certain separation between his room and ours. So we'll be on the ground floor and he'll be on the second floor. If we say Achsadra Dola Hoysa, then it means, in other words, it's on the ground floor. They're saying we really want to take the Achsadra, which is the best part of our house, the patio or something, and we want that the Nubi should be as close to us as possible. So that's the Gemara I was going to ask. So Bishleim Lamander Omer Achsadra Hainu D'Chtiv Kir. So if we say it was an Achsadra and they divided it by putting a wall in the middle, then we understand the word Kir means a wall. El Lamander Omer Aliyah, but if you say it was a second floor that originally did not have a roof and now they're putting a roof on it, my Kir, so what does the word Kir mean? And it says, okay, Shakirua. It means not Kir Meloshin wall, but Kir Meloshin a roof, Meloshin Tikra. Which Marsha points out, he brings from Yalkut Shimoni that they didn't just make a ceiling Shakirua Batikro Maziva. They actually made a full fledged roof with beams and plaster the whole 9 yards. So it wasn't just them that they're putting like a tarp over it or something. They're actually making it into a proper roof. And therefore, the pasuk can use the word kir for that.
What was the problem with
The problem was, it's not a problem. It's the Isha Shunamis is saying to her husband, this Isha Lakim, Elisha, is regularly visiting our town. We should set aside a place for him. He shouldn't have to stand with all the other Orchim. He should have a room of his own. So now the question is, what is that room of his own? On the one hand, the word Aliyah means a second floor of a house. Usually that's what it means. The Gemara is going to explain another possibility of what it means. And the other possibility, and Kir means a wall. So that's what I'm saying. Marsha says, if it just meant in the simple sense, they're saying we have a second floor of our house, we're going to put up an extra wall in order that we have a room reserved for him. The problem is, how is he going to get up there? There's usually only one staircase leading up to the second floor. Because then how is he going to get in and out? He'd have to go through another room. If he's going to go through another room, you might as well reserve the whole space for him.
The stairs can start from outside.
No, Marsha is understanding that there was only one staircase in the house. And they were to go from the first floor to the second floor, and therefore, if they're dividing it up, then either in order to get in and out of his room, he'd have to go through a different room. So that's why the Gemara has these two possibilities. So the Gemara says, Bishleim Lamanda Omar Aliyah. Okay, now on the other hand, if we say that it was on Aliyah, second floor, Hainuch Div Aliyah Skir. Okay, the Pasuk says Aliyah, which means the second floor of a house. El Lamanda Omar Achsadra, but if you say that it was an Achsadra, it was a porch or a patio or something, my Aliyah Kir. So my Aliyah Skir, why are we calling it Aliyah, which means something that you go up to, a second floor of a house? And the answer is, according to that opinion, it means Me'ula Shebabatin, means the best part of the house. Now, then they continued, V'nosim lo'isham mita b'shulchan b'kisei menorah, the Isha Shunamis tells her husband, we'll put for him over there a bed and a table and a chair and a lamp. Those are the basic things that a person needs in his room. There is, by the way, there's a mimer of the Friedrich Rebbe. You can find it in Maimonim from Tresim, where he shtels the Chanas Pasuk and he explains the deeper meaning behind it up in Avoda, that the Isha Lakim over Aleinu Tomid is the Neshama, and you have to prepare for it, this kind of ruchniistic furniture, in order that it has a place to be able to accomplish within you what it's supposed to accomplish. Anyway, so we're saying that they're benefiting him by giving him this furniture and making it available for him. So the Gemara says, Omar Abaya b'itaymer Rabbi Yitzchak. Abaya, some say Rabbi Yitzchak says, Haroitza lehones, if a person wants to have hana from other people, he's visiting other people and he'll have hana from them, yehone, then he's allowed to do that to Elisha, just like Elisha did. We shouldn't say that there was any issur in it. We shouldn't say that maybe it would be a midas chsidus not to take hana from other people. Now, you have, for example, we know that a Talmud Chacham is not supposed to make, it says in Pirkei Avos, you can't make the Torah kaudim lachtechba, a shovel to dig your parnosa with. Some, the Rambam explains there in Pirush HaMishnayos, that means that would be, for example, to take a regular payment or something for learning, for teaching Torah, that you can't be doing. But here we're talking about as an occasional thing where he's passing through and they're going to give him a present that he's allowed to do. Marshall adds also, what about sonim atonis yichya? What about the idea that a person should hate receiving gifts? He says the difference is when we're talking about when a person is on the road, he doesn't have his furniture with him. He's considered in effect like an oni because he doesn't have the things with him that he normally needs. So therefore, if he wants to have hana from other people and allow that people should provide him these kinds of basic furniture, then gesundheit. But not other kinds of things. You see, in fact, Maharsha says, Elisha himself, later on, you have the story with Naaman, where he wanted to offer Elisha, after he was cured of tzaras, he wanted to offer him silver and clothing and whatnot, and Elisha turned it down, and when Gehazi took it, then Elisha cursed him. So we see, it's not that Elisha is open to receiving any kind of gifts, but dafka when he's on the road, and therefore he's in effect and on. Conversely, Abaya or Rabbi Yitzchak continues, if a person does not want to have hana from other people, al yohana, then he has the right not to do that, because Shmuel Haramasi, he can act like the way Shmuel from Rama, the Navi Shmuel did. And the point is, Rashi says, you shouldn't think if a person acts that way, it's not that he's acting in a way of gasus or ruach, like he's saying, I'm greater, I'm higher than you, and therefore you're beneath me to take anything, for that I should take anything from you. It's not considered a matter of sinner. It's a valid reason to do it. Now, how did Shmuel do it? Shenema was Shuvasa Haramasa Kishambe. So the Pasuk describes how he would travel around Eretz Yisrael and teach the people Torah and judge their cases and so forth. And then it says was Shuvasa Haramasa. He would return to Rama Kishambe because there was his house. Now, why do we need to be told that his house was there? We know from earlier Pesukim that he lived in Rama. Doesn't need to mention it again. Means wherever Shmuel went, he took his house with him. He had an RV with him, to put it in modern terms. And wherever he went, he had his furniture and his clay tashmish and whatever with him, such that he doesn't need to rely on the local balabatim. One point being, he was going around to judge the people, so he needs to take extra care that there was actually in Daf Yomi in Ksubas a few days ago that a dayan has to take extra care not to even get the smallest smidgen of hana from people who he might be judging, because then you have a problem of sheichad. So therefore, you have to take that extra measure. So we're saying that bechlal, though a person wants to do that, gesunta hate, it's a valid way to do it. Okay, getting back now to the story of Elisha. So now a few psukim earlier, Vatoimer Elisha, the Isha Shunamis says to her husband, Hinina Yodaiti ki Isha Lekim Kodeshu, behold now I know that this is a man of Hashem who is holy. So first of all, how does she so she's telling her husband, implying that her husband didn't realize it. This teaches us that women are more familiar with the character of Urchim more than a man is, because they're at home more. So therefore, so they get to know the Urchim. What
the Bini Yisera
no doubt helps with that. Also, yeah, Iyun Yaakov points out, by the way, the word Orchim in the plural is because the Gemara is going to point out soon. She realized, on the other hand, that Gechazi, Elisha's Meshores, is not of that caliber. So therefore, so she actually recognized both Orchim, the caliber of Elisha, and the lack of caliber of Gechazi. Now, when we say Kodeshu, she says he's holy. Mino Yoda. Okay, she knows he's an Isha Elikim, he's a Novi. How specifically does she know he's Kodesh? Where does she see something of his Kedusha? So Rab and Shmuel argue how she knew it. Chad Omer Shalei Rosa Zvuv over al Shulchan. One is that she saw that flies never flew over the table where he eats. Now, Marsha explains, when a tzaddik eats, it's like the Mizbeach. A tzaddik's table is like a Mizbeach. And we know the Mizbeach and the area around it, in the Beis HaMikdash. We say in Pirkei Avos, one of the Nisim Shanasu of the Beis HaMikdash was that, there were no flies ever in the area where they cut up the korbanos. So therefore, in keeping with that, then when she saw that there were no flies anywhere near Elisha's food, then that told her that he's an ish kodesh. The other one says sudden shalpishta nitzia loyamitase. She put linen sheets on his bed. Vloyrosa carry olav, and she never saw any carry on those sheets. Even though the person is traveling, makes him more prone to tumas carry, but with him that never happened. In fact, there's an explanation from the Vilna Gaon that says those attack are the two areas in which the kedusha of a yid is the most marked. You see, in fact, you look in the Rambam how he set up a sefer. He has sefer kedusha, and he explains in his akdama, in fact, that sefer kedusha he focuses on the two areas of mitzvahs in which we see the kedusha of a yid, where it says on them that the Eibishta says, "I made you a holy nation." One is macholas asuris, and the other one is bias asuris. So therefore, in keeping with that, she saw his kedusha in those two areas, as far as his food and as far as his bed. So then, when she says kodesh hu, she says he is holy. So that's a miut. Amr of Yosef of Chanina, she's saying to her husband, "Hu kodesh mashor se ene kodesh. He's holy, but his attendant Gechazi is not." Shenema, and we have later on in the story, after she has a son, and then one day the son is crying out, "Roshi, Roshi," and they bring him home, and he dies, and she rushes off to Elisha to ask him to complain to him and to ask for him to help. Then the pasuk says, she fell down on her face in front of Elisha, batachsik beraglav, she's holding on to his legs, and the pasuk says, "Vayigash Gechazi lahodfa." The pasuk says Gechazi came close to push her off. And Omer of Yosef of Chanina, sha'achse b'hoid yafya. The word lahodfa is a nutrikon. It's short for the words hoid yafya. He grabbed her by the hoid, by the glory yafya of her beauty, which is, Marsha says, that means he grabbed her by her breasts and then pushed her away. Marsha says, how does the Gemara know that? Because the next thing Elisha says to her is, he says, harpe lo, he says, leave her alone. Now, if he had just pushed her and now his hands are off her, there's nothing to leave her alone. So therefore, his mashma that he's grabbing onto something of her, and therefore Elisha is telling him hands off. Why is that called hoid yafya? Marsha refers to, we learned a few days ago, that particularly the fact that the Eibishta created dadim b'mkoyim bina is a tremendous hoid, a tremendous glory for a human being that they don't have, it's not lower down on the body like the way it is by animals. Therefore, that can be described as hoid yafya, the glory of her beauty. So the fact that he grabbed her in such a pritzistic way shows. Now, to be sure, that was after the earlier part of the story. When she says Isha the Kim Kodesh Hu was before that story. Nevertheless, the point is she realized already from before that he has a tendency towards such a thing, and later on Taka came out in practice. With that said, there are different explanations. I mean, Fort, you know, you're gonna have, he's gonna grab her in such a pritzistic way, you know. There are other explanations. Ben Yehoyada says that maybe actually Hoyd Yafya means her face. The pasuk says she was lying on her face on the ground in front of Elisha. So maybe like he's picking her up to move her. So he's holding on to her. He's holding on to her forehead and her face. So that's the Hoyd Yafya, but still, so it's not quite as pretty, but still. There's an explanation from Rav Tzadik HaKohen Lublin where he says, it's not maybe that he deliberately, he follows Marsha's pshat, that it means her breast, but he said, okay, not that he meant to grab her by there. By punct it happened, that was where he grabbed a hold of the push. But still, the fact that he was not a Kodesh, unlike Elisha, is why it came out that way. Otherwise, the Eibishter would have protected him from doing such a thing in the first place. And then the Ma'ure Naim, the Nochem Chernobler, has a very interesting explanation on it. He says it's meant symbolically. Meaning, what do we have? The continuation of the story over there is that Elisha tells him, he tells him, take my stick and go me mechayim mason the boy. And what do we know? We know that he was mocking the whole thing, and then as he's running along, the medrash says he's telling everybody, oh, you think the stick can be mechayim mason, and he gets there and nothing happens. So the point is, but Moir Anayim says that the virtues, in other words, so you have, there's the hod yafya, there's the beauty, the chitzoniastic beauty of the Torah, in particular, the ability of how to go about being mechayim mesim, but then you have the pnimius of it, which is the emunah of it. He grabbed only onto the hod yafya, only onto the chitzonias, and was missing the emunah in it, which is why it didn't work. In any case, the point is that we're saying the Isha Shunamis perceived all of that, even ahead of time, and therefore, so now that's why she's saying Kaddish Hu. She says to her husband, over Aleinu Tomid, she says that Elisha is constantly passing by us. Now, it's not constant. It's whenever he happens to be in town. So you can't say Tomid, at least fine. Marsha points out, you don't have, Tomid doesn't necessarily have to be every day. It could be something that's every week or whatever, but at least it has to be something that has a regular schedule. Elisha passing through Shunem is not specifically a regular schedule for it. So why is she saying the word Tomid? It means, if a person hosts a Talmud Chacham in his house, and he gives him hana, he allows him to benefit from his nechasim, like the Isha Ashunamis that her husband did for Elisha, mala all about kosev kilo hikriv makriv tmidim, then Hashem counts it on their behalf as if they brought a korban tamid. The same way, Marsha says, the tmidim are, so to speak, the food of Hashem. So the same way, when a person gives a Talmud Chacham food, and we just said, if a Talmud Chacham's table is like the Mizbeach, so therefore it's considered as though he's bringing a korban to Hashem. We find, for example, that when Yisrael came and they had a meal over there, Oilo Zvachim Lekim, and they ate Bifnei HaLekim, that it means that because Talmud Chachamim, Aaron and Moshe were present, therefore it was considered like a korban that was brought to Hashem. So in the same way, the Isha Shunamis and her husband had that source. And therefore, the pasuk gives the word Tomid for it. A different cute little story involving these words over Aleinu Tomid, by the way, nothing to do with the Gemara except for the fact that it's the same pasuk. They tell a story about the, so we know there was Reb Nosson Adler in Frankfurt. He was one of the Rebbeim of Chassam Sofer. And even when he was a boy, he was a dohoi ben a yid. He had his own path in avodas Hashem, a form of chassidus basically. Among other things, he used to sit up all night and learn, and then of course he has to sleep at some point. So the next day he would often make it late to shul. So the chidah at one point was visiting Frankfurt. And every day he sees this boy who is coming by the end of Davin by Aleinu. So he said, this is the pasuk, Isha Lekim Kodeshu over Aleinu Tomid. He's always passing by when Aleinu comes. Okay. V'omer Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina Meshum Rav Lezman Yaakov. Again, having mentioned one thing that Rabbi Yosef Rav Chanina says in his name, we mention another thing. Al Yamud Odom Makom Gavoya V'Yispalel. A person should not stand in a high place in Davin. Elo Makom Nomoch V'Yispalel. A person should stand in a low place in Davin. Shenem Makom Kosicha Hashem. As the pasuk says, I call out to you, Hashem, from the depths. Now, I mean, of course, it means that a person has to have the emotion of feeling in the depths in front of Hashem. But as you have the expression. You have the expression that Sefer Achinuch always says, "Ha'odim nifok kafi poloisav." A person is affected by what they actually do. So when a person puts himself in a physically low place, then it helps develop by him the emotion of taka feeling lowly in front of Hashem. Tani nami hachi. We learn similarly in a brisa, lo yamid odim lo yagabe kisei. A person is not allowed to stand when he's davening Shemana Esrei on a chair, v'lo yagabe shrafraf, or on a bench or a stool. A shrafraf is more a stool. V'lo yamakim gavot, a footstool. Yeah. The loy b'mokum gavaya, or on a high place, the ispalel and daven Shemana Esrei. Ela b'mokum nomoch v'ispalel. Rather, a person should stand in a low place and daven. Lefishen gavus lifnei mokum, because there's no being high in front of Hashem. Shenemu ma'makum kosicha Hashem, as the pasuk says, I call out to you from the depths, Hashem. And also, you have another pasuk showing the sense of anivus that a person has to have when he davens in front of Hashem, a tefillah of the oni when he is fainting, when he feels like he's fainting in front of the greatness of Hashem. So this is actually a halacha that's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Now, one thing it points out if the area that a person is standing on is dalad al dalad, amos or more, or if it's surrounded by a railing, then this din doesn't apply because then it's considered a mokum la'atzmai. Only we're talking about the person stands, let's say, on top of a chair in shul, then you have the issue. B'chlal, standing on a chair is a different matter also, a chair or a stool. You have the problem, it's wobbly, and a person is not going to be able to be mechaven and davening. But we're talking about even if you don't have that issue, if it's less than dalad al dalad, it's not surrounded by a railing, then you're not supposed to daven on it. But they actually had some of the old shuls in Europe. I've read this about the Alpine shul and other shuls were taka built with going down. You'd actually have to go down a few steps from the street to get into them, also in keeping with this idea of mima makim kosef asher. Some places also, it seemed, the Mephoshim also explained many times in the shuls of the times of the Gemara, the place where the chazan would stand would be lower than the rest of the shul. And for that reason, the usual expression is yoded lift that tape, that he really goes down to daven by the arm. When a person is davening Shemana Esrei, he has to keep his feet together. As you find by the Malachim, that their feet were a straight foot, implying they keep their feet together, and it appears like one leg. So what's the significance of it? The Rashba over here brings an explanation. A certain min once asked the Rashba about a number of these statements of the Gemara, and the Rashba gave him an answer at great length. In this particular one, he says there's two reasons. Number one, a person should be acting when they're davening as though like they're chained up. I have no ability to accomplish anything on my own. Only the Eibishter gives me the power to. Therefore, I'm standing rooted in my place. I can't move, showing that I depend completely on Hashem giving me the power to do anything. For the same reason, actually, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that under some circumstances, a person should be davening with their hands clasped one on the other like this. Same idea. In other words, he's showing that I can't move my hands either without the Eibishter giving me the power to. Second of all, then he goes on to explain the idea is the Eibishter created a person that he should gain a shleimus and become on the level of the Malachim and even beyond the Malachim. And since we're saying that the Malachim have Ragleim Rego Yishara, then we want to be like them and tackle what does it mean? The Rashba goes on to explain what does it mean, Ragleim Rego Yishara. The word regel can also mean a cause of something, like you have in the pasuk Vayivarach Hashem Oscha L'Ragli, where Yaakov says to love and Hashem blessed you because of me. So therefore, Rego Yishara represents the idea, the Malachim, they do exactly what Hashem wants. So you can't say, for example, that there's a different cause of them doing such and such. The only cause of them doing anything is Hashem's Ratzon. So therefore, a person has to also stand in that posture in Shemana Esrei, showing that the only cause that he recognizes that the way he should live his life is the only cause that will be for him to do anything is what the Eibishter wants. So there's that. There's other ideas of what it represents. Standing like that with a person's feet together. Another explanation. Eitz Yosef brings another explanation that it brings from Mahari Abuhav that it represents that I can't even run away. For example, I'm again similar to what the Rashba is saying, but putting in a different osius. I don't want to run away from Hashem. I want to stand here in front of Hashem as long as possible. The Gemara continues. What does it mean? The pasuk don't eat on the blood. Now there are actually a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Marashah refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin that learns half a dozen different dinim from that pasuk. It's a warning to the ben sora mora. Don't eat in a way that's going to lead to bloodshed. It includes, for example, you're not allowed to eat meat of korbanos before the blood of them is sprinkled on the mizbeach. And it includes a bunch of the Sanhedrin, the members of a base, they have to fast on the day when they sentence somebody to death. B'chola. But now we're saying one of the meanings of it is lois soichlu kodim shetespallu al dimcha. Don't eat before you daven regarding your own blood. You're asking Hashem to preserve your blood and to preserve your life. So therefore, don't be eating before it. Now you have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch about this. You have, you know, there are exceptions. In particular, you know, a person can take a drink, for example, before they daven. And even you have, as in the famous story in Hayom Yom with Rebbetzin Rivka, that if a person has to eat because of their health, then fine, you know, besser daven and besser essen sort of daven and than the other way around. So that's why you have, for example, you know, the Minhag Olam, they have a piece of cake or something on Shabbos on Shabbos morning before they daven. So to befrap that Shabbos morning we daven. Late. But the point is, you're not eating in order to fill yourself up. As the Gemara is going to say over here, over the person's eating in order to be able to be mechaven and daven. So that's legitimate. And the Gemara continues, Ika Damri, another version, Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Amr Rabbi Yechan, and Amr Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Meshumar, Balazim, and Yaakov, Kola, Oichel, Vashoysev, Achakach, Mespalel, a person eats and drinks, and then he davens, all of Akosev, Oimer, Vahoysi, he schlachta, Afre, Gavecha. On such a person, the Pasuk says on him, the expression, you threw me behind your, behind Gavecha. Literally, Gavecha means your back or your body. But it means, I'll take you, Gavecha, Ele, Gavecha. Don't read the word gave her, your body, behind your back, ela ge'echa, behind, meaning that after your gaiva, meaning omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, la'achash in his gosh zeh, what are you saying? Well, after the guy has made himself about gaiva by eating and drinking and being comfortable, by yishran and shurun, then kibble all of malchus shemayim, now he's first going to accept on himself, oh, malchus shemayim, so you can't do that. The Rashba explains, continuing in his explanation over here, he says, first of all, what's this? What's this? Lefnesh tisfalo al dimchem. What's the expression? Davka al dimchem. So he says, because you think about it, really, a person, if a person does averus, sooner or later, they deserve to have their blood removed from them, and to no longer be living. So therefore, so a person has to accomplish what the Eibush to put him in the world for, in order to, and that includes that he has to daven and thank Hashem, and that gives him the right to go on living. So now, if he goes and eats and drinks that before that, then he's showing that he's bringing himself to a gaiva. He's showing, first of all, that that's more important than davening. And he's showing that he has a gaiva. And therefore, the altikri gave ele geyecha, the Rashba says, not even really a real altikri. We're actually saying that to daven after acharei gavecha, after you filled up your body with eating and drinking, is gaiva. That itself is gaiva. And therefore, therefore the Eibushter is saying, you shouldn't be doing that. Marsha actually mentions that also we find all the context of that pasuk Oisi Shlachta Achre Gavecha is the Eibush descending a Novi to tell Yeravam off for what he did with the Egle Azav and all. And with Yeravam also, we find that his Gaiva is what led him to all of that, the idea that he doesn't want the Jewish people to return to Rechavam, and everybody's going to see Rechavam sitting in the Azara and him standing. So you really have a direct connection between Gevcha and Geach. The Mishnah goes on to say that it talks about the time of Kriya Shema in the morning, and it says you have Ad Shalosh Shos, and then the Mishnah says if a person lanes Shema after Sof Zman Kriya Shema, then the Mishnah says that the Loi Hifsid, he hasn't lost out to Odom HaKodem HaTorah, it's considered like a person is learning Torah. In other words, he doesn't have the schar of learning Kriya Shema in its Bismana, but he still does have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, because 40 same pieces of Torah. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Mani, Godol HaKodem Kriya Shema, Bo Inosa, Yosima Oisik HaTorah. You see from the wording of the Mishnah that a person who says Kriya Shema in its time before the Sof Zman is greater than someone who learns Torah. We're saying when a person says Kriya Shema after the Zman, that he's like a person who reads from the Torah, implying that learning at Bismana is greater than learning Torah. Which Tosfos says, in other words, we don't mean when it's the time for Shema. When it's the time for Shema, Taka, a person shouldn't be Osek Batorah. You say it says even Rav Shimon ben Yochai would interrupt his learning Torah. He was Torah Osek Nosek, and even he would interrupt for Kriya Shema. What we mean is that compared to a person who's Osek and Torah at other times of the day, saying Kriya Shema Bizmana is greater even than that. Further on, the next Mishnah talks about the machlokas b'shama b'shilol. What posture do you say Kriya Shema in? Yeah, b'shama says that in the evening you should be laying down, and in the morning you should be standing up because of a shach b'chol kumacha. And b'shilol says you can say it in any posture you want. There are Rishonim, by the way, who learn, Rabbeinu Yonah and other Rishonim, who learn that when b'shama says matin, it does, which we're going to have now in the Gemara, it doesn't mean laying down; it means sitting. Sitting, maybe reclining a little bit. Anyway, b'shama holds in a certain posture, and b'shilol says that not. And the Gemara goes on to discuss. So the Mishnah says, Beis Hillel says, because after all it says, v'lech t'chava derech, and that implies that you can say Shema when you're walking in the same way you can say it in any other position, and then Beis Shama and Beis Hillel go back and forth on it in the Gemara. So one thing, in the course of that, the Gemara mentions the idea that even if a person is torud, even if a person is distracted by his personal matters, he still has to daven, and he still has to say Kriya Shema and put on tefillin and so forth. And the Gemara mentions, Omer Rav Ada bar Zavda, Omer Rav, Ovo chayiv b'chol mitzvahs amuris b'chol mitzvahs amuris b'torah. Even an ovo is chayiv in all the mitzvahs. Now, not an oinin, but an oval after the kvura has taken place, is chayiv in all mitzvahs, chutz min ha-tefillin, with the exception of tefillin, shenemar, sharei nemar behen, pe'er, because tefillin are called glory. Shenemar, pe'ercha, chavoy shalecha. We find Hashem tells Yechezkel, he tells him your wife is going to pass away and you are not going to be praving avelos in the normal way. You're going to be acting in certain ways different than a regular oval. And that way, when people ask you what that's all about, you'll tell them that this is what's going to happen at the time of the Churban. And Hashem tells him, pe'ercha chavoy shalecha, put on your pe'er, your glory, meaning your tefillin. Meaning even though an oval normally doesn't, Hashem is telling Yechezkel, you should. So what's the point? So Rashi says an oval is misgoyle b'tzara, he's wallowing in his tzar, misgoyle b'tzara b'ofer, or in other places in Shas, he uses the expression misgoyle b'ofer kauner, like his glory, his horn, which is a symbol of glory and power in Tanakh, is wallowing in the dust. So therefore, it's not appropriate that he should be putting on pe'er, that he should be putting on the beautiful tefillin. Tosfos points out you actually need both psukim because first of all, otherwise you would think once we're saying that an oval is potter from tefillin, maybe he should be potter from other mitzvahs as well, and therefore we need a special reason to say that tefillin are something different. And on the other hand, the fact is Rashi's reason. On the other hand, you also need Rashi's reason about ma'olah ba'ofer karnei. Why is he chayev on the other days? Why is he potter only on the first day? And the reason, and it has to be because only on the first day is his me'olah ba'ofer karnei really intense. And that's not the halacha. The first day, although an oval is potter from tefillin, and the rest of the day is not. In practice, what you have is really generally, the oval generally puts on tefillin right after the kvura. Because when we say he's potter on the first day, really only means until the kvura takes place. Okay. Further on, the Gemara says, "Tanan Rabbanan, Beshilul Oimnim Oimnim V'Korin Yoshvin V'Korin Matin V'Korin Horcham Daderach V'Korin Beshilul Oimnim V'Korin." You can stand when you're saying Kriyashma. Yoshvin V'Korin. You can sit when you say Kriyashma. Matin V'Korin. You can be lying down. Not lying down, by the way. The Gemara mentions elsewhere. You can't be lying like so all the way flat on your back or something. That wouldn't be Derech Eretz to Kriyashma. But it means, in particular, the Gemara mentions you have somebody, let's say, who's sick. Or is fat or whatever, so he can sort of be laying down and like turning on his side a little bit. You can be walking on the road and saying Krishma. Oskin b'malachtan b'kodin. You can be person can be doing his malacha and saying Krishma. Later on in the Masecht, actually in the second parak, it talks about there's a difference in that regard between the first pasuk of Shema and the rest of Shema. The first pasuk you have to stop your work and stop your walking and so on and so forth to be mechaben. The rest of it less so. And the Bryce says, "Umaisa b'Rabbi Lezer, b'Rabbi Shmuel, b'Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah, show you a subin b'makom echad." Happened once that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah were both reclining and eating the pashtos in a certain place. Rabbi Shmuel muta b'Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah zokuf. Rabbi Shmuel was sitting down or lying down, and Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah was sitting up straight. She gives man Krishma. Then when it came time for Krishma, Hito Rabbi Lozer is Zokef Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Lozer changed his position from sitting upright and leaned down, or lay down, or sat in a reclining position, the Zokef Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel also changed his position and sat straight up. So Omalei Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah le Rabbi Shmuel, he says, Yishmuel achi, em shalacha mashal, ma devadayma. What are you doing that before you were lying down? Even Bais Hillel in the Mishnah, after all, doesn't say you can't be lying down for Shema. They're saying you don't have to. So why are you davka sitting in a different posture to show you what are you trying to prove with that? He says, em shalacha mashal, ma devadayma. Let me give you an analogy, what you just did, what it's like. Imagine you have a person, people tell him you have a long beard, and he tells them, fine, in that case, let it go to the destroyers. You're complimenting my beard, let me, then I'm gonna shave it off, I'm gonna destroy it. On the side of it here, Yad Yosef brings a different explanation from the Aruch, that it means, he says, he means fakir. I'm growing my beard long, aftzalachos, against those people who cut and shave their beards, so I'm aftzalachos going against them. Anyway, the point is, it's a figure of speech saying like when a person acts davka just to be kapoyer, just to be the opposite of everybody else. So afkach, so the same way, Rabbi Lozer says to Rabbi Shmuel, kolz mancha afkach ate, you seem to be doing the same thing. Kolz mancha ani zokuf ate muta, as long as I was sitting up straight, you're reclining. Achshav shani tesi, now all of a sudden I recline. Ate zakafta, all of a sudden you sat up straight. What's the point? Amalei, so Rabbi Shmuel tells him, faker, I did the right thing. Ani osisi k'divei b'shilo, I did according to what Bais Hillel says. The Atal Sitsa Kadiva Bais Shammai. You're following what Bais Shammai is saying, that you daft after recline or sit reclining for Krishna. And that's not right. When Bais Shammai became Bais Hillel in a Mishnah, you have in the Mishnah over there where it says over there that Reb Tyrfon one time did, and then he was in danger from listing, and the Chachamim criticized him for it. The loy oid, not only that. So first of all, I'm doing like Bais Hillel. If anything, what I did is more correct. The loy oid, and not only that, even if you want to say that fine, Bais Hillel doesn't mind a person reclining, they're just saying he doesn't have to. But El Shema Yiru Atamidim Yikbu Halacha L'Doris, conceivably the Talmidim, if they see me reclining and they see you reclining, they're going to think that that is what needs to be done, and they're going to establish halacha for all time that it has to be that way, and that would be wrong because the fact is that halacha is like Bais Hillel. So in other words, the point is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is telling him, or Rabbi Shmuel rather is telling him, there is a concept of midas chassidus, sure, but you have to be careful that you don't do the midas chassidus in such a way that it's going to mislead people into thinking into applying the halacha wrong. So therefore, in a case like this, yes, I daft have to act the opposite of what you're doing in order that everybody should realize what the real halacha is. Once that's established, sure, then once everybody knows that, then sure, I could recline if I want. Okay, further on, the next Mishnah talks about the brachas before and after Shema. So the Gemara says, "My mevorich." What is the bracha? What are the brachas on Shema? In particular, the Mishnah says you have two brachas before Shema in the morning. So what's the nusach of the bracha in the morning? Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yoshia. The first one is Yotze Or Uvorich Choshev. Hashem forms light and creates darkness. Rashi, by the way, makes a point of saying you shouldn't think Yishtabach is one of them. Yishtabach is the end of Pesukah Dezimra. In fact, you can say it even before Zman Krishma. So therefore, the two brachas are Yotze Or, which ends with the Yotze Hamoris, and the second one, the Gemara goes on later on to discuss the second one. The Gemara mentions the Machloikas, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, whether the second one begins Abba Rabo or Abbas Olam, and that's why you have the different Nuschos between Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Sfarad and Nusach Ari, which one you say. So the Gemara asks, Lema Yotze Or Uvoda Noida. Now, to say Choshech is a very negative thing. We always try to use Loshen Nakia. You have a sugya at the beginning of Pesachim that talks about when it says over there, Ur La Ba Oser, and the Gemara gets into a long discussion over there about saying that Ur is actually a euphemism for the nighttime. So why are we using the word Choshech straight out? Lema Yotze Or Uvoda Noida. Let's rather use the word Noida, which the word Noida means kind of like twilight or like a dim light. So therefore, that would be a nicer way of saying Choshech rather than saying it straight out. And in fact, in that Gemara in Pesachim, you have the two different opinions, what Ur La Ba Oser means. And the Gemara says one of them is that Ur means Naghi, which is the same shortish as Noiga, and that which means the night. So it means like very, not the night, actually. It means like very early in the morning when it's still like half dark outside. So why don't we say Noiga? Because we're using the Lashon HaPasuk, the words Yotze Or Uvorich Choshech come from a Pasuk in Yeshaya, and the Chachamim were misaken the Bracha based on it. But that same pasuk in Yeshaya continues. Then the whole pasuk goes Yotze Or Uvorich Choshech Oseh Shalom Uvorich Ra Ani Hashem Oseh Kol Eila. So we, as it is, we don't use the word Oseh Ra, that Uvorich Ra that it says in the pasuk. We change it to Uvorich Sakol Mikamin Kedichtiv. Do we say like the Lashon HaPasuk? We don't. We say Uvorich Sakol. Instead of using the word Ra in the bracha, we replace it with Uvorich Sakol to use nicer language. So the same thing. Why didn't the Chachamim substitute instead of Choshech? Instead, they should use a nicer word like Noiga. And the answer is Ella Amar Rava Kedila Hazku Midas Yoim Balayla or Midas Laila Bayoim. The reason is because during the daytime we have to mention the fact that Hashem creates the night, and by the night we have to mention that Hashem creates the day. Marsha refers to something from Rabbeinu Yonah that says that the reason is the Gemara mentions in a different place that a min asks Rebbe, it seems since the pasuk says Yotze Or Uvorich Choshech, it sounds like Chas V'Shalom, there are two different creators, one of light and one of darkness, which we know is a popular notion among the minim of that time. And then Rebbe explains to him that no, when it says Oseh Shalom Uvorich Ra, then it makes it clear, and you have other pesukim that make it clear that Hashem created both of them. The point is, therefore, we want to show when we're saying the bracha that in the daytime we want to stress that Hashem also creates the night, and vice versa, in order to show that we acknowledge that it's one Hashem who created both of them. So therefore, in the morning, we do want to say the word choshech rather than replacing it with a nicer word like noy. So the Gemara asks, the Shlema Midas Laila Bayom Kedam Yunin Yotza Urbar Choshech. Okay, where are we mentioning the nighttime, the choshech of the nighttime in the daytime? We just said, we're saying Yotza Urbar Choshech. El Midas Yom Balaila Hechem Ashkafasla. Where is the Nusach in the nighttime brachas where we mention the daytime, where we mention the light of the daytime? I'm going to buy it because we say, Golo Orem Pnei Choshech for Choshech Pnei Er, that Hashem rolls away light and replaces it with darkness, and darkness to be replaced with light. So yeah, we mention Ur and Choshech, both of them in Ma'ariv as well. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola for Lama Tishrei, first day of Rosh Chodesh. Mashiach's Malchus is going to be on a higher level even than Moshe Rabbeinu's Malchus. Because we know one thing about Mashiach, he's going to be Morach V'doyin, where you have the term Morach means that he smells, and V'doyin, you have the two different explanations. It means Meloshin Vadai, that he'll be certain of what of his conclusion, or V'doyin Meloshin Dayan, that he'll smell and thereby he'll judge. So he's going to be judging based on Reach, that he's going to have the koichas to be able to see the pnimius of each person and judge based on that. And Reach is a koich that's higher than all the other koichas. It touches the etzem and nefesh, which is why the Gemara later on in Brachas talks about the how do we know that you make a bracha on good on good fragrances? It's because we say kol neshama tahalo ko halalukah. So we see that the chosha Reach has more to do with the etzem and nefesh than any of the other senses. So now when it comes to a king, usually the halacha is that he has to judge only based on edim. What we're saying, Mashiach won't need edim. He'll be able to judge based on smell, showing therefore that his malchus is going to be even higher than Moshe Rabbeinu's malchus. Halachas, we're continuing on halachas of Macholos Asuris. Moshe apparently wasn't able to smell the truth. Yeah, he needed edim. So he goes on to say, talking about dinim and macholas asuras and kalim and whatnot. You have to be careful not to leave by a goy a keli that he might end up using it, because then he's going to trade it up. Even you give it to a goyish repairman to repair it, you have to be if there's reason to suspect that he might have used it, then you're going to have to ask a shaila schacham how relevant that is nowadays. Basichnish, but it's something to consider, I guess. Sometimes also, another din, sometimes you have a bird was tied up and they throw it onto the ground and then they shecht it. That would be an issur, because you have a din in Hilchos Shechita that if an animal or a bird falls on the ground, you have to make sure that it's able to walk properly for amos. So you have to keep it 24 hours, whatever. So therefore, so you have to be careful with such things. And in the Shlachtos, I know they also have this issue of how to do it in such a way that they're not going to have this problem of nefula, that the animal was knocked down and then you have shilas kashas. In the Shlachtos, in the slaughterhouses, yeah. Then you have the various dinim about treifas. Sometimes during the summer, you often find with geese and other birds like that, you find little bubbles or little warts and things in the kishkis, and those can be treifas. Nowadays, also sometimes you have they check the standard thing in the plants. They check for this kind of thing in the kishkis. But once in a while, you find something like that, or you find sometimes you have a collection of blood someplace near a joint or whatever, and depending on various circumstances, many times you need to ask a shayla schacham on such things.